Welcome to this February 18th edition of Talk of the Rock. I'm your host, Kavitha George, and in studio with me today are Sarah Harrington and Margaret Greutert from the Kodiak History Museum. Would you introduce yourselves and tell us what you do at the museum?
Sure. Thanks for having us. My name is Sarah Harrington. I work as the executive director. My job is really to work with the board of directors and make sure that the vision for the museum is being carried out by the staff. I also pay the bills, but we have a lot of fun down there.
Yeah. My name's Margaret Greutert. I'm the curator of collections at the Kodiak History Museum, and it's my job to manage the caring for of all the collections and also the exhibits.
So we're here today to talk about acquisitions at the museum, and that's the process of obtaining and caring for and sharing the objects that represent our history. Is that right?
Yes. We do have over 2,300 objects in the museum collection and over 1,300 archive collections, and that's including about 20,000 photographs.
Okay, yeah, that's a lot of history to care for. but before we get into the steps involved in acquisitions, because as I understand, it's a pretty involved process, I want to talk about the way that you view the collections as belonging to the community itself. Could you describe the role that the museum plays in that?
Yeah, we really see ourselves as caretakers of all of these objects that tell our history. All of the objects that are cared for by the museum are held in public trust, so they aren't actually owned by their museum. They're owned by our community and everyone in Kodiak.
Yeah. So let's go through the steps then that the museum takes when acquiring a piece.
Yeah, well, we broke it down into 10 steps to make it seem easy, each object is different, and we go about caring for and learning about each object on a case-by-case basis.
How long do you think it would take to from start to finish acquiring a single object, whatever that might be?
A few hours.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The first part can take the most amount of time, and that's when someone brings us an object. And so it's if someone feels that they have an object in their possession that they want to donate to the museum, they'll first contact me. And it's not as simple as just, oh, hey, take this old thing from me. We're really looking for objects that tell stories, and the value of all of the objects in the museum collection are in the stories that they tell. So someone can have something worth $1 million, but it's not really worth anything to us if it doesn't come with that story.
Sure. So what kinds of objects are we talking about?
Well, we collect anything from contemporary artwork to pieces of wood found buried in the beach. So it's really many things that tell the history and story of Kodiak.
Yeah, often it's not like far gone history. It can be like stuff that's very current from artists who, are currently living in the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for example, right now, one of our temporary exhibits showcases a collaboration of two Kodiak artists, Natasha Priestess and Sarah Lowen, and it's them interpreting, what it means to live and work in Kodiak, and it shares our history that way.
Mm-hmm.
So there's many ways that an object can be acquired and cared for in a history museum. But I guess step one is someone brings it to me and we really take the time to understand what this object is, what it means to them, where it came from, and really collect that story so we're able to preserve it for the object.
Sure. Do you have a favorite example from like the last few months?
Ooh, yes. there's so many. My favorite objects are usually part of our archive collection. It can be like one document or a series of letters, photographs that really give you a deep dive into someone's life or a topic. And so one thing that we were able to acquire recently was from Marion and Dr. Bob Johnson. And it was an archive collection that Marion had collected throughout their lives, really honoring Bob. And his life. And so you're kind of able to open this box and see this picture that they've created of all of these events that he was involved in, and things that he gave back in the community. So in 50 years, someone's able to go back and see all of these things that he right. did and how he contributed. So that's a highlight for me. Do you have anything, Sarah?
Well, we just got a piece by Lena Amison Burns called It's All Love Now. And it's this big, beautiful contemporary piece of art that was really fun. Margaret and I got to unpack it when it arrived at the museum 2 weeks ago, I guess now. Yeah. And it was just really special to be able to open this fabulous piece of art and see all of the details. And Margaret and I tried to be really hip and do little like heart signs with our hands and like post it on social media. And it was really just a fun process to be involved in.
What kind of art was it?
I actually have a picture of it right here for you, Kavitha. It's in our last newsletter.
For those of you who are not in the studio, we'll post a picture.
Yes, it is a large wood panel depicting almost an abstract seal. And she uses these bright, bold colors, and she nods to our fishing culture here with using kind of salvaged fishing materials like buoys, and it's really neat.
Yeah, it looks very impressionist from here.
Yeah, like but up close you can see all the mm-hmm. details of the little seal's face, and it's sweet.
I like that. Okay, so someone comes to you with an object, and then what happens next?
Well, then we hold it until our next acquisitions committee meeting. And our acquisitions committee are members from the Kodiak community. They're elected by our board of directors, and they meet twice per year. And I basically present them all of the objects that were brought to us.
How many is that normally?
It's usually around 10 to 15 objects okay. every 6 months. And we sit down, we discuss them, and they essentially vote on what we want to preserve forever in the permanent collection and what things would be better in other places. For example, we have a reference library, so sometimes people will bring us books. And so we don't want to commit to preserve them forever, but we still want to use them. So we'll put them in our reference library, or we have an education collection that's things we can touch. Or our last thing is our research files. So maybe if it's not a primary source, it'll still go in our research files for people to use. And so it's really up to our acquisitions committee to discuss and determine, you know, how are we going to preserve this object, what it's going to take to interpret it forever, and how we're going to collect it.
What kind of criteria does the acquisitions committee use when they're deciding what they'd like to put where?
The first thing that we look at is our collections policy. We recently updated it in 2017, and it's a guide for us of what our priorities are for collecting. So if someone brings me an object first, I look at our collections policy priorities, and I make sure it kind of fits within those. If it's kind of teetering on the edge, I'll still present it to our acquisitions committee, and we can discuss that. Mm-hmm. And really, it's mostly just saying, is it related to the people, work, and life of Kodiak?
Okay. Mm-hmm. People, work, and life. All right. And who is on the acquisitions committee?
Right now, we have 7 members, and they serve 3-year terms. And so we elect them through our board, and they're people who really have a passion to volunteer and work with our collection. And so right now, I think we have 7.
It's a fun opportunity for people to get in and really talk about what we have, why we have it, the work that's involved. Oftentimes, some of the questions that come up are related to how challenging will it be for staff to preserve this or mm-hmm. to share this? And so anyways, we're actually in the process of working with the board right now to kind of get a better understanding of the terms and make sure that there's new opportunities available, because this is another great way that people from the community can join the museum team, make sure that their view of Kodiak life right. is being recognized at the museum. So, but we have Marcia Oswald, we have Jenny Osterman, we have Mike Rostad. Ooh, jinx.
Libby Eufemio.
There's a nice group And they've been working together for quite a while. And that's another one of the kind of ways that the vision at the museum is stabilized, is that we have the board, we have committee members such as the acquisitions committee, and then the staff all kind of working in partnership in different roles to make sure we're appropriately preserving and sharing from our own angle.
It's also, I just want to stress kind of the importance of this committee, because it's really our primary way that we're including community input for what goes in the collection.
Sure.
And so it's really helpful to me to get a gauge on that. And so sometimes during our discussions, it'll be like, hey, you know, we really want to see these things, or we want more information on this. And so they kind of keep us in check and make sure that we're doing things equitably and as equitably as possible.
Mm-hmm. Representing like all walks of life and eras,
which is hard to do.
Sure. Yeah. We're a really diverse community. Okay, so then step three is the deed of gift. Can you explain what that is?
Oh, yes. So kind of 3, 4, 5 is all the weird legal stuff we have to do in order to bring something into the collection. After the committee votes yes, I have to send a bunch of paperwork for the donor to sign. So it's really helpful to me if I can keep in contact with the donor for at least 6 months and try to better understand how to care for the object and that they are giving us legal title to keep it forever.
Okay.
Then we assign everything an object number. So everything in our collection has a number so that we're able to search it. It also has metadata within, like gives us context within the number. Mm-hmm. Each number is the date that it was accessioned into the collection, the donor number, and then an object number. So we really can keep track of stuff. And then we finally photograph the object. And that really helps us search through and put in our database, so I don't have to go into the collection room and find an object every time.
Sure.
I can just type in the number and it pops up on a screen, and it's really easy.
Do you ever take objects like on a loan, like not permanently part of the collection, but if someone wanted to just kind of let you guys use it for a little bit?
Yeah, we take loans all the time. For example, our exhibit Home and Away right now, we have at least 12 artworks on loan from Natasha Priestess, and she's going to take those back. Some of those artworks are for sale and they've sold, and so they're actually on loan from different community members. But yes, as long as we have a clear date of giving it back to someone and we're using it for an exhibit, then we do that all the time.
Okay, and then let's move on to cataloging.
Oh, yeah. That's the most kind of complicated thing. Cataloging can be as simple as just ordering a group of newspapers by date and kind of hashtag tagging a bunch of different keywords so you're able to search. It could also be, you know, talking to a lot of community members on maybe a more sensitive object or an object that has many stories related to it.
Do you have an example?
Yeah, maybe a more recent one is Father Paisius recently donated an archival collection from David Pestrikov after he passed away, and it is it depicts a lot of moments in his life, but also the church's organization. Mm-hmm. And so we really want to be able to capture as much about that collection as possible. So that means,
is that like letters, photographs?
Both letters, photographs, certificates, books. And so being able to understand why the church decided to give that to us and what's important about it to them. And then also maybe why these objects were important to David Pestrikov as well.
Yeah.
So there's just many, many people to consult. Also, there's, you know, a lot of things to consider. Can we put these photos online? Who is able to use them? Is there anything sensitive about them that you don't want shared super publicly? Can different populations touch them? Things like that, that you just always need to consider and respectfully store those objects.
Right. So just kind of collecting all of the information around whatever collection or object it is, so that you can have that on file.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so your article about the acquisition process says this work is never finished, I imagine.
Yeah.
This is the bulk of your job, and I guess it continues forever.
It does. You know, it's most of my job is creating systems so that we are able to preserve this information and retrieve it for generations to come. And so, you know, how do we capture those stories and save them in a sustainable way? And how do I search for those stories 60 years later?
Yeah. Is that something you think about as you're kind of going through cataloging and the rest of the process? Like, this needs to be readable and understandable to someone who is not me in like a century.
Yeah. And it's really hard. There's a lot of things to consider. We have a couple tools that help us. One is making sure a lot of the information is in one place. We have object files, so each object in our collection has its own physical file folder with all of the associated documentation from it.
Okay.
So if someone calls me up and they're like, hey, I want to look at that piece by Lena Amison Burns, I'm able to pull that file. I have an artist statement from her. I have maybe a conservator report of how we should care for it. I have kind of like all of the receipts and things about how to put it together and things for shipping, and we'll have that forever.
So I guess what's the difference between the cataloged information and what's included in the object file?
Oh, yes. So that's kind of why this work is never done, because we always are adding to these files. So if someone has new information or a new way to interpret something, we always want to capture that and add it. However, you know, we catalog things in our database, which is an online database or on the computer, and it's really hard to be able to constantly be updating both systems.
Okay.
And so that's just an ongoing process, I would say.
Well, go ahead, Sarah.
Do you have something?
I think part of what's worth mentioning here is that we're really lucky in a lot of ways in that you know, our history here is something we're still really engaged with as a community, and we still have access to a lot of elders who have intimate knowledge and experience with artifacts or photographs in the collection and things like that. But we're kind of moving into a new era where we're losing a lot of those connections. And so part of what the museum is doing is working really hard to make sure that we are preserving as much information as we can in the right way so that we can access it. And that's a lot of Margaret's work, is making sure that all of those pieces are connected and accessible, not only by the staff, but also by the public. And so one of the things we don't mention in this article is that we're working to get the collections available online. We're working to make sure that people are getting in into the space, coming upstairs. Margaret's launching a new tour called the Upstairs Downstairs Tour, I think. And so we're really trying to make sure that we are appropriately and sufficiently carrying a lot of that information and the value of the work that we do and the stories that we've kind of taken in to make it accessible for people now and in the future.
Great. Yeah. If for anyone who hasn't visited the museum, Margaret and Sarah work on the top floor in sort of like an attic-y area. That looks much more like a reference library, and then the museum itself is downstairs.
Yes. I guess just to add on to what Sarah was saying, a lot of the time we have someone coming into the museum with some amazing knowledge about something, and they want to tell it to us and share it with us. And it's finding a sustainable way to be able to capture that and use it in the future. So, you know, if someone comes and hands me an MP3 file of an oral history, what is that related to? How am I going to number that and catalog that so that I can find it in the future and it's not a waste of time for people?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an ongoing process, but we really want to make sure that the items that we do bring into the collection are really well documented and well taken care of, and we can retrieve that information, because that's why we're here.
We're kind of in a new phase at the museum as well. We've been in a period of significant growth. And if you can imagine when the museum was incorporated in the 50s, we were at a gathering point. So everyone was bringing us all this stuff and we were finding places to put it and how to take care of it and kind of building a team to accept all of that. And then another mention, so Alice Reeser worked at the museum for years and years. She was involved as a volunteer and staff member at the museum for about 40 years. And she was the first person to really go through all of those photographs and write down names and stories and work on collecting the actual data that went with it.
Thank you, Alice.
Thank you, Alice. And now Margaret is the one who's really setting us up for the future in terms of inputting all of that into the database. So right. that way, even when Margaret's gone, people can still access it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So for the next Margaret or Alice or whoever comes
yeah.
next.
Yeah.
And I'm imagining that some of the cataloging and documenting process is connecting like the object that you're working on to maybe other objects in your collection too.
Yes. It's really exciting because we use a pretty common museum database called Past Perfect. It's kind of made for small history museums, but you know, we've never really utilized all of its functions before. And so part of this archives access project that's happening right now is getting our archives into this database so that we're able to use this tool and run reports based on different keywords or donors or time periods. And that's really exciting to me. So it's really enabling us to use our collection more efficiently and be able to share it way more efficiently and easier.
Right. So actually, before we talk about archives access, should we wrap up this?
Oh my gosh, yes. So after we catalog anything, I get it into the database, I make the object file, and then I have to make a storage location for it. And we rely a lot on volunteers to help us come in and make some beautiful boxes and storage mounts for these objects. And so it's been great being able to go into a collection room and take down a box that we have to do is open it up and you see this like gorgeously displayed object in this box. And so our curator of education, Natalie, has been doing a program called Artifact Observations. And so I think once a month, she takes an object or series of objects from those collection rooms. And it's because we have really efficient storage mounts and boxes that she's just able to go in there and safely remove them and display them for people really easily.
Do you run into a space issue?
Yes. Yeah. But in recent years, it's been pretty awesome. My predecessor, Michael Bach, he really got the ball rolling on getting all of our collections into designated storage spaces and storage rooms so we're able to assess what space we have.
Okay.
And there's a few things that we're able to do to create some room. One, we recently removed our reference library from one of those storage rooms and brought it out into our collection work and viewing space so that people can come upstairs, make an appointment with me, see all of those books and use all of those books. Mm-hmm. So we have more room in the storage rooms. Those are conversations that we will have to have in the future.
Sure.
Because we are continuing to collect, we're continuing to make history, and we are housing them in the oldest building in Alaska and yeah. trying to care for that building as well.
Right. The building itself, is that cataloged somewhere as
a, yeah, kind of. We're really grateful to our partnership with the city of Kodiak. They actually own the building, mm-hmm. and we work in partnership with them to care for it. And so we have a lot of information on the building, and we kind of file that away as if it were an object on loan, kind of.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's great. Okay, so let's talk about the archives project that you have going on.
Yeah, so our archives had never really been cataloged before. We did an awesome job at collecting all of these amazing photographs and histories, and now it's time to think about getting them searchable and online so that anyone can search through them and not all of this institutional knowledge is just riding on me or one person. Mm-hmm. And so we first did an inventory of every single archive collection we have, and we're currently getting just a baseline inventory in our database so that if anyone is interested, they're like, hey, do you have any information on the old agricultural experiment station? I'm able to just kind of search our database really quickly and give them an answer.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, is a really fun pop trivia quiz for you. Do you know what that is,
Kavita? I don't. I was about to ask.
Oh, it's right next to here.
It's right here. We're on it.
Yeah. Wait, we're actually sitting on it?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Here in Signal Hill. So what did it do?
Do you know the old barn next to the library?
Yes.
So that was part of one of Kodiak's agricultural experimental stations. They were all over Alaska in the early 1900s and just really trying to figure out how we could do agriculture here. And so this whole hillside was cattle and vegetables.
Interesting.
And we have a bunch of photos of it.
And when, when the new library was constructed just a few years ago, the Kodiak Historical Society, which is the entity that oversees the Kodiak History Museum, was instrumental in getting the barn added to the National Register of Historic Places.
Oh, how great.
So that's part of the work we do as well, is kind of recognizing and prioritizing historic sites and areas of significance in the community.
Do you know what the outcome of those experiments were? I mean, you don't see a ton of agriculture in Kodiak, so.
We still have cows around.
We do.
We still have some cows.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, but we have, when we brought out all of our rare books for our reference library, we have at least a decade worth of all the agricultural experimental station reports from Alaska. I think it's from like 1910-ish to 1930-ish.
Gotcha.
And so if you wanted to look into that, you could.
If anyone
listening come and look at that.
Wants to know more about agriculture experiments in Kodiak, make an appointment with Margaret. So people can volunteer on the Archives Project, is that correct?
Yes. I'm always looking for people who want to deep dive into some of our collections. As I said, the cataloging work is never done. So we have a baseline inventory of everything, but some of our more complicated collections, such as we have an oral history cassette tape collection that really has never been digitized before. Or we have, you know, collections we have a collection from the Kodiak Times when they went under, I guess, and it spans 19 boxes, and those photographs have never been organized yet. And so we're really looking for people with a passion to explore some of these and organize them in a way that's physically accessible for us, and basically tell us what's in the box. So I'm always looking for people to do that.
Yeah. And how can they get in contact?
They can, our website, under the collections tab on the homepage, there is a spot to email me, and then also our volunteers tab. They can go and email me. Also, I'm at collections@kodiakhistorymuseum.org.
Perfect.
Or you can call us anytime at 486-5920.
Great. Well, thank you both so much for being here on Talk of the Rock today. For anyone who wasn't familiar with the process of acquiring an archive in Kodiak's history, I'm sure you are now. Or if you're not sufficiently, make an appointment with Margaret. Again, I'm Kavitha George, and you can join us again next week. We'll be talking with another museum in town, the Aleutic Museum, about their photo archives. So that'll be on Talk of the Rock next Tuesday, the 25th at 12:30 p.m.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you
for coming.
This has been KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program. Tune in next Tuesday at 12:30 to hear more about local issues and organizations.